Thank you, Brother Matt, for your song selection tonight. For all of you who are here, we do appreciate your presence. And I can't think of a more appropriate song for Matt to have led than this one that we've just sang. And in a few moments, I hope you agree with that. I don't need any help feeling old. Come next month, I will have been retired a year. But I went to lunch. Lynn and I went out to join some folks at Country Kitchen, and there was a couple of troopers there, and I spoke to them. They had recognized some of the past stuff we'd done. Anyway, they went to leave, and I said, "You guys be safe." And you know what they said to me? "Yes, sir." Uh-huh. I thought, we ain't in the courtroom. You ain't got to say sir to me. But it reminded me of what I did for 26 years. I tried to help people understand something they thought they could not understand. I remember a dear lady whose child was a victim in a crime. And it was my job to prosecute the fellow that did it. And I never shall forget. She looked at me with tears in her eyes and said, "Sir, do I need to get a lawyer?" And I took great pride in saying, "No, ma'am, I am your lawyer. I represent you and your daughter." And the same thing is true in ministry that I've done for a whole lot longer than 26 years, coming up on 45 years. And that is helping people to understand something they think is beyond them, that I cannot understand. And I want you to leave this building tonight knowing what most of us already know. And that is that this book is not beyond my understanding. I'm so glad that when God started writing the Old Testament, He started writing talking about people and places. Because scholars tell us that is, number one, that which we are the most interested in. And secondly, the easiest for us to remember. And the Bible gives us story after story after story of people. Of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Joseph and Moses and David and Isaiah and Jeremiah. And then we get to the New Testament and we learn about Jesus the Christ. And Peter and James and John and Barnabas and Stephen and Philip and the Ethiopian nobleman. And I sure do wish we knew his name. Because when we get to glory, I want to meet him. He was a noble man. And Paul and Dorcas and Lydia and on and on and on the list goes. And then you compound that with some of the places of the Old Testament, like the Garden of Eden, like Ur of the Chaldees and the land of Abraham, and places like Bethel in Egypt and Canaan and Jerusalem and Bethlehem and Antioch and Corinth and Ephesus and Babylon and Persia and Greece. And once again, the list is almost endless. But the reason I bring that up is this, and something that oftentimes we fail to remember, and that is that the Old Testament is the background of the New Testament. In fact, I will go as far to say is that one can not understand what to do to be saved without a fundamental knowledge of the Old Testament. Not to mention that which the New Testament teaches. For example, the Hebrew writer says, one of my favorite passages, and you've heard me quote it many, many times, in Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 1, "For the law of Moses," Old Testament, right, Matt? "For the law having a shadow of good things to come, but not the very image of the thing, could never with those sacrifices which the comers offered year by year continually make them perfect. Wherefore, when he cometh into the world, he saith, sacrifice and offering thou wouldest not, but a body thou hast prepared me." What's he saying? The Old Testament is laying the foundation for the New Testament. And that's why I'm so glad
that God took so much time in revealing gradually what we call the scheme of redemption. And sometimes I hesitate in looking at the Bible to refer to the different divisions as books, because if we're not careful, we tend to think that they're all separate. And I've tried through the years to think more in terms of each book as a chapter in one book rather than a bunch of different books. Because, as you well know, each chapter is a very important part of the whole. And that's why I'm so glad the Bible is written for the average person. I was told long time ago that the book of Acts, the book of conversion, is written on a sixth grade level. And I can remember when I first heard that. Well, that means Jethro Bodine could understand it. I see some of y'all didn't even get that. Some of y'all not old enough to remember Jethro Bodine and his sixth grade education. But the book of conversion was written on a sixth grade level so that the average person could understand it. And that's why I'm so glad again that there's so many practical books in the Bible, chapters in the Bible, that have spiritual food for daily living. Because bottom line, heart of the message, don't miss this if you miss everything else. And I'm so glad that song was led. The Bible is a book of redemption. A book of redemption. Now what I want to give you tonight is a series of words that all start with the letter P. These are a bunch of P's in one pod that help us put the Bible together. The first P is the word perfection. And that's Genesis 1 and Genesis 2. The world was in a state of perfection. Man and woman lived in a state of perfection. They lived in a place of perfection. It was Eden. They had need of nothing. And what's so fascinating about the Bible is that from the book of Genesis chapter 1 and chapter 2, in the Garden of Eden, it's man going up toward perfection. And Paul is going to hint on this theme that man was started with perfection and he's progressed downward since then. Got those backwards. And that's what Paul emphasizes in Romans 1. That we started perfect. Now, how'd that work out? We didn't do too well, did we, Brother Charles? We didn't do too well with that. We went down from the Garden of Eden until this good hour. And so we went from perfection to a problem. And the problem is sin. And it started in Genesis chapter 3. And dear folk, Genesis 3 is one of the most vital chapters in all of the Bible. And I've said repeatedly that one cannot appreciate, for example, what Jesus went through in his temptations in Matthew chapter 4. And you remember the way he was tempted. In my judgment, you can't really appreciate that until you go back to Genesis chapter 3, and guess what happened? Same thing happened to Adam and Eve, happened to Jesus in terms of temptation. The outcome was a lot different, right? And guess what? Same thing happens to me. Same thing happens to you. We're all tempted, James says, of our own lust and enticed. We'll get to that in a minute. But that's what the beauty of the Bible is all about. He starts with the perfection of Eden, and then God tells us about the problem of sin, but it's not long after that. Genesis chapter 3. When you get to God's purpose. God's purpose for all of this is redemption. And somehow, some way, we've missed the boat, in my judgment, in leaving out Genesis chapter 3, beginning in verse 15. Would you hear it? "And I will put enmity between you and the woman." He's talking to Adam now. And he's talking to them about the consequences of their sin. "I will put enmity between you and the woman, and between your seed and her seed. He shall bruise you on the head, and you shall bruise him on the heel." To the woman he said, "I will greatly multiply your pain in childbirth. In pain shall you bring forth children, yet your desire shall be for your husband, and he shall rule over you." What are you saying, Lord? Those are the consequences. Those are the problems of sin. And yet there is the promise of redemption. "I will put enmity." What are you saying? I'm going to take care of this. I'm going to put enmity between you and the woman. And the promise of redemption is that which runs from the beginning to the end, from Genesis to Revelation. Because there's always, even in the divided kingdom that we've been studying about, there is a promise. Promise that the remnant's going to return. Prior to that, there had been the promise of the nation to Abraham. And not only the promise of the nation in terms of people, but that of land. And I say it over and over again, they're shooting at each other tonight over a total misunderstanding and misapplication of that very promise. And so redemption's there. Redemption is promised right after man falls. Now, that's no accident. That's what God intended for them, and that's what God intends for you. And that's why I say it over and over again, that our understanding of the Old Testament is the key to understanding redemption in the New Testament. Now, when you keep going back to books in the Old Testament, over and over and over, there are pictures of redemption. There's the Exodus from Egyptian captivity. There's other captivity down the road, and God takes great delight in my judgment in using one of the greatest women in all of Scripture, a lady named Esther. And you remember what Esther was told by her uncle. "Who knows but that thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" What did the people need then? Redemption. Who was going to play a mighty role in that? Esther. And all through the Old Testament, there are these examples of the law as a type being in the Old Testament being fulfilled as the antitype, or rather got them backwards, the antitype in the Old Testament revealed as the type in the New Testament. For example, in Hebrews chapter 10 as well. Again, the law having a shadow. And Paul in Galatians 4 is going to speak of it as infancy. It was there in the mind of God before the foundation of Christ. For example, Moses is pictured as a redeemer, wasn't he? Well, anybody else in the Bible as a redeemer? Yeah, that would be Jesus. And Deuteronomy 8 paints a beautiful picture of what God expected out of Moses as a redeemer. And then you keep reading in the story of the deliverance of the children of Israel, and you read about the Passover. How that the death angel passed over. And once again, Paul in 1 Corinthians 5 in the vernacular makes a big deal out of that as Jesus being the Passover. Even Aaron in the priesthood, the Aaronic priesthood, is a picture of Christ. And before him, the Levitical priesthood, 1 Peter 2 and verse 5, is a picture of Christ. And then you get to the king. And who can escape the fact that King David is a picture of Christ, according to Luke chapter 1. And one thing I say again, they hadn't figured out, and they're shooting at one another as we speak, the nation of Israel as a picture of the church. So there was the problem of sin. There was the purpose of the redemption. There were pictures of redemption. And guess what? There were also poems about redemption. Bob and I had the privilege of sitting at the feet of some great teachers. Y'all have heard me say that many times. One of whom was a fellow named Clyde Miller. He was something else, wasn't he, Bob? And Brother Miller taught us the Psalms. And I've still got my textbook in my office of our study of the Psalms. And we've studied them here. What were they? They were Psalms about redemption. The Lord is my, I shall not want. What is that? That is redemption. But there were other books of poetry about redemption. Job, in that sense of the term, is a picture of redemption in poetry form, in that it's a book about suffering. Job deals with the problem of human suffering. And the answer that Job wants the most is the one that he cannot have. And the answer that Job gets is not an answer at all. It's a person. The answer to Job is the presence of a holy God. But that's the picture in the Old Testament of redemption through poetry in the book of Job, in the book of Psalms, in the book of Proverbs, where so many different writers wrote of, or Solomon rather wrote of wisdom, and wrote of the application of wisdom. And even the Song of Solomon is a book about marital love as God intended it, not the world. And then when you get to the New Testament, the church is referred to as what? The bride of Christ. And so there are poems of redemption. And then so much of the Old Testament is written by prophets. And I regret very, very much that we refer to them sometimes as major prophet and minor prophet. As is, one is important, one's not. No, no, no. That's not the meaning at all. Never intended to be that. It's the length of their books. Major prophets wrote longer books than did the minor prophets. But when you read the prophets, you follow this. And I have a brother who has a master's degree from Harding Graduate School of Religion in the prophets, in the Old Testament, with an emphasis on the prophets. And some of the prophets wrote prophecies about the church in Isaiah chapter 2, about the virgin birth in Isaiah chapter 7, about the sacrifice of Jesus in Isaiah chapter 9, about the good news in chapter 11. Even John the Baptist, one crying in the wilderness in Isaiah 40, the sacrificial redemption of Jesus Christ in Isaiah 53, even a prophecy of the name Jesus, or the name Christian rather, in Isaiah 62, the prophecy of the establishment of the kingdom in Daniel 2. A prophecy of that which would be miraculous in Micah chapter 7. That's why I need to know the Old Testament. That's why you need to know the Old Testament. Now then, here's where we get ready. See, this is what the Bible is all about. because he doesn't stop in telling us about the prophecies of redemption. He tells us about the preparation of redemption. How do I get ready? Now, one of the deep studies that have been done through the years is about that which happens between Malachi and Matthew. There's 400 years of silence between Malachi and Matthew in terms of the written word. Now, I didn't say God was silent. I said there's 400 years of silence in terms of the written word. But guess where Matthew picks up? Have you read Matthew 1 and 2? Have you read that lately? Where does Matthew pick up? Redemption through people. And he starts with the genealogy of Jesus. In fact, he says in Matthew chapter 1 and verse 1, the book of the generation of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. Remember those people we talked about a while ago? Well, there they are in Matthew chapter 1. And then Matthew begins and continues that thread of developing redemption that began way back there in Genesis 12 with Abraham and continued all the way to Malachi. And I'm so glad that we have good teachers, and I had good teachers, who taught us Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and John. We refer to them as the Gospels. In fact, Matthew, Mark, and Luke are referred to as the Synoptic Gospels because those three basically tell the same synopsis. John's different. About 60% of what he writes is unique to John. But all of them join in writing to make the transition from the old law of Moses until we get to Acts chapter 2. And that's the preaching of redemption. See, we went from the preparation in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John to the preaching of it in Acts chapter 2 through 28. It's the book of history. It's a book that tells us of the establishment of the church. And I love the context because people have come to Jerusalem from all over the known world. You remember? To observe Passover. And to be there. And many of them would stay over to Pentecost. Because they traveled from so far, it wasn't practical to leave and come back. So they stayed until Pentecost. I don't believe that's an accident. See, here's another word that starts with a P. It's called providential. God knew that the people would be there. And he gave his apostles the miraculous ability to speak in languages they had never said. Walter, don't you wish you could do that in Honduras? But they did it back then, didn't they, brother? And they're accused of being drunk. And I love this with all my heart. Because Peter, I know, the fellow used to run off at the mouth. Peter stood up and said, "These men are not drunk as ye suppose. But this is that which was spoken of by the prophet Joel." See, he connects this Old Testament story with the New Testament story of redemption. And then there's this fella in Acts chapter 8. He is a noble man from Ethiopia. He traveled a long way to do what the Lord told him to do under the old law. And he's riding along reading the prophet Isaiah. Once again, we're connecting the old with the new. And he wants to know, is he speaking of himself or somebody else? And once again, another passage I love with all of my heart is that Philip began at that point, at that part, and preached unto him Jesus. Preached unto him Jesus. And as they went on their way, they came to a certain water, and the eunuch said, Here's water. What hinders me from being baptized? Philip said, If you believe, you may. And he commanded the chariot to stand still. They went down into the water, and Philip baptized him. And the Spirit of the Lord called away Philip, such that the eunuch saw him no more, but he went on his way rejoicing. What was there to rejoice? He had connected the Old Testament with the New. Isn't that right, Matt? He had connected the Old Testament theme of redemption with the New Testament theme of redemption. And that's why the book of Acts is there. And then every book after that, from Romans to Jude, is all about the practice of redemption. Not just the principles of redemption, not just the preaching of redemption, not just the preparation for redemption, but the principles of redemption. Because every congregation was different. Every congregation had problems. Laodicea was lukewarm. Corinth had their problems with division. Galatia had their problems with misunderstanding the old and the new, the very topic we're talking about tonight. And so when Paul, sitting in prison, wrote these letters to these congregations, it was all about the practice and the principles of redemption. But we're still not through. Because you get to the very last book of the Bible, and I've said before, it just kind of makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up when I hear somebody put an S on it. That's not it, is it, Matt? It's not Revelations. It's singular in nature. It's Revelation. Meaning what? Well, Paul had said in 1 Corinthians 13, when that which is perfect is come, that which is in part shall be done away. Well, that old has been done away. That which is perfect has come. And John the Revelator said in Revelation 2 and verse 10, Be thou faithful unto death, and I'll give you a crown of life. He's not insinuating in any shape, form, or fashion that you have to have a PhD, that you have to do postgraduate work in Bible in order to be saved. But what helps put it all together is the theme of redemption from Genesis 2 and through Revelation. And understanding that there's a God that loves you. That there's nothing you have done on this earth in your life that could make God not love you. And like in the book of Job, where so many bad things happen, God has done something about it. He gave us His Son. As we spoke this morning, to be a propitiation for our sin, not more than a substitute, more than just a player going in for another player. He took my place. He endured a death I deserve. Walking and talking, breathing example of how much God loves you. And that's why we beg people to obey the gospel. We beg people to stay faithful to that walk. And that's why tonight, if you're subject to the Lord's invitation in any way, we invite you to come. While we stand, while we sing, Matt will lead us.